Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast for Wednesday, September 6th. I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSorta.com and The Step Back. Today, I have a very special guest that I'm very excited to have on the program. It's Mo Dakhil. If you don't know who Mo is, he used to work in the NBA. He worked for the Spurs and the Clippers, and now he hosts the Jump Ball podcast and runs the Jump Ball University. It's one of my favorite NBA podcasts. It's very technical. It's very detailed, and he has a lot of great guests, including me once, who's probably the worst guest he's had. But Mo and I got deep into this Cavs trade, talked about some of the scenarios you will find in this trade, what it could mean for the Cavs in terms of lineups, in terms of fit, talked about Jay Crowder, Isaiah Thomas, the value of the Nets pick, LeBron's future, everything you want to know about this Nets trade in a little more detail and from a different angle, I think you'll find on the show. And I hope you guys enjoy it. Make sure you give Mo a follow on Twitter, listen to his podcasts, and check out his work. His Jump Ball University, even for fans out there that know about pick and rolls and know about some of the more basic things, it's one of my favorite things to just give you a refresher on basketball stuff. So please go check that out. Mo is a great follow and gives really great insight on this podcast, I think. So hope you guys enjoy Mo. We'll be back again tomorrow with another podcast. Please get in those mailbag questions for next week. Drop them into lockdowncavs@gmail.com. Or to on our / Cleveland Cavs, there should be a post up today when you're listening to this, or tweet them at me at Locked On Cavs as well. And if you're so inclined, please go give a rating and review to this podcast on iTunes. You can do that by going in there, finding the show, and just finding and giving it 5 stars and a short review. All it takes is this, like this one from John312. Great takes on the Cavs. He says, for any Cavs fans, they must listen. Highly recommend it. So, John, thank you for that review. And please, if you'd like to give a review of this podcast, I'd really appreciate it. That is the absolute best way for you to support this podcast and to make sure we get more listeners and do well on iTunes. But here's today's show. Mo Dakhil is the guest. If you missed yesterday's show, Jake Madison from Locked On Pelicans was the guest, and we got into the Boogie trade and what that could mean for the Cavs if they decided to deal the Nets pick for DeMarcus Cousins this season. But Mo is, again, one of my favorite guests I've had on the show, and I hope you guys enjoyed today's show, and talk to you again tomorrow.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Joining me today on the Locked On Cavaliers podcast is Mo Dakhil. Mo, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. Thanks for having me, Chris.
No, of course. It's good to have you on. You can definitely need to check out all of Mo's stuff, the Jump Ball and the Jump Ball University. Real quick, Mo, just give everyone an idea of what you're doing with that university project, because I think for fans that are trying to learn more about the game, from the couple I've looked at, it's a very easy way to kind of understand some things that they are going to see all the time when they're watching Cavs games or any other game.
Yeah, the Jump Ball University has kind of been an idea of mine for a while that I finally, this summer, had time to kind of sit down and put these clips together. It's to help exactly that, like the real casual fan who wants to know more about basketball and more of the X's and O's and ins and outs of it, and what is this and what are they talking about. I thought that there wasn't enough out there to really help fans, you know, really get an understanding of it. And, you know, I'm kind of just sort of explaining to fans like the basic basketball concepts. And over time, hopefully, if you follow through all those videos, you know, we're going to graduate to more complex things and go into sets and break down actual plays. But you got to get the fundamentals down first.
Yeah, absolutely. So go check that out if you're trying to understand basketball in a better way. And I think if you're watching basketball, in my mind, it's like, it's just like when I started watching soccer, it was like I needed to understand what I was actually watching instead of just being like, oh, someone did something cool. Like, I want to understand the granular detail. And I think that's a really, if you're new to basketball or you didn't play or like you just want to learn more, to be able to do it. So we're here, obviously, today to talk about what is the biggest story of the Cavs this summer, maybe the biggest story of the NBA this year. That's Kyrie Irving goes to Boston. The Cavs get Isaiah Thomas, Ante Zizic, Jay Crowder, the unprotected 2018 Nets pick, which could be very good in a top-heavy draft. Mo, in your mind, just in a vacuum, what do you make of the return the Cavs got from Boston?
Well, Chris, you forgot to mention the all-important 2020 second-round pick.
Oh, yes, I did forget the all-important 2020 second-round pick. That will clearly result in like the Cavs getting like Michael Jordan 2.0.
Yeah, you know. but, it was a good return for the Cavs. It had many layers to it that I thought were really impressive. You know, obviously this is without knowing what we know now about Isaiah Thomas's hip, which kind of hurts it a little now. But at first glance, I was like, wow, they got something that can help them for now in Isaiah Thomas. Jay Crowder, who is going to be a real important piece for them, somebody on a great deal that, you know, they can hold on to for the next couple of years and don't have to worry about losing him. Ante Zizic, who, you know, didn't have a great summer league, but a lot of people were attributing that to just him just getting over from Europe and jet lag and a whole lot going on. So there still might be more promise behind him there. And, you know, that 2018 pick, I don't think it's going to be as great a pick as other people think. I think Brooklyn's going to be a little bit better. I still think it's going to be in like the 6-7 range. But overall, I think this was the best deal they possibly could have done. You know, I don't think anybody really was giving them an offer that they really felt like we got to jump to it. Didn't sound like Phoenix was going to give up Josh Jackson or Devin Booker. Really, I wasn't in love with the package that you kept hearing from Denver that was surrounded Jamal Murray. It just didn't seem like there was anything that was really out there. And I felt like this was the best possible deal they could have put together. And who knows? I could be wrong about the Brooklyn pick. It could be a top three pick for all we know. And then that really kind of changes the game.
What makes you think the Nets pick might be better than a lot of people, including myself? And I mean, what I think the over-under numbers had them as like the third worst team in terms of over-under numbers, which doesn't mean everything. But why do you think the Nets pick isn't going to be a lock for a top five or as high as 1, 2, or 3?
Yeah, so there are a couple of things. You know, one, if you just look at how they started last year, you know, Jeremy Lin goes down right away. You know, but early on, they looked pretty good. Not to say that they would have been a playoff team by any stretch or anything like that. And I don't want anybody to think that's what I'm talking about. But they've added talent. You know, they got D'Angelo Russell, which is, I think he's poised to have a really good year, you know, in a new situation. They have great veteran leadership, not just in Lin, but then adding Damari Carroll and pieces. They're just not, they have more talent. Their problem last year was you looked at their roster, and after Lin and Brook Lopez, you're just like, God, they really just don't have any talent on this squad. Whereas now you look at it down the line and you're like, okay, they have Allen Crabbe. That's another guy. Like you have guys that they can play. I look at, there's several teams that are worse in the Eastern Conference in particular. Like, I think Chicago is going to be bad. I think Indiana's not going to be really good. I think Orlando's really up in the air. Atlanta, I think they're going to be trying to tank. I think, you know, on the Western Conference, I still think Phoenix is one of the worst teams in the NBA. So I feel like they're better than most of those teams.
And I think it's worth noting, too, that they don't have the incentive to be – like, I don't think any of these teams are, like, saying every night, we want you to lose. Like, I don't think, like, you have the Hawks are saying that. But, like, they are trying to keep their odds in mind. And I think we saw teams last year, like, the Lakers say, okay, we're going to rest our young guys at the end of the year because, like, we would like to be in a better chance to keep our pick. And I think, like, Atlanta, that makes a lot of sense. Indiana, that makes sense for them to do it. The Lakers, because of their – even the Lakers, who like could be better, have those 2-5 protections on their picks. So like they maybe need to win at the end of the year or something. Like that could factor in as well. The Nets are just a team that like they don't have their own pick this year. They have D'Angelo Russell, like who has a lot to prove. Lin, who probably still has a lot to prove. You have a lot of other young, interesting players. Like there's no incentive for that team in second year of Kenny Atkinson to actually give up at the end of the year or like position themselves for the lottery pick. Like they're going to be going hard at teams every night, even if Because it's just like, why, what else do they have to play for other than sort of pride and sort of like improving in some tangible way? Whereas like the Hawks, the Pacers, the Suns, the other teams you mentioned are in a position where like, yeah, like they have their own pick and they should be trying to get someone like a Doncic or a Michael Porter or a Bagley.
Yeah, I mean, they got, those teams got a tank. They just have no reason to tank. It's not, and they haven't had one for a few years now, but now they're slowly adding talent to their roster, which is why I think it's, you know, I look at their roster compared to these other teams, and it's just not a guarantee to me. Everybody else is talking about them being one of the worst teams. It's not a guarantee for me. I think Coach Atkinson's a great coach. He's a very good development guy. These guys really, he really reaches these guys. So they play hard every night. They definitely surprised a ton of teams during the season last year. So I think that's just I just don't think it's going to be a top five pick necessarily. I don't think it's a lock for that, at least barring an injury or something.
Yeah, and I don't know, and I don't know watch enough like basketball of the, you know, the U20s or like high school or college to like know what the draft outside of the guys that we know are good, what that's going to be. So like that potentially, from just the base understanding I have, that could be impactful for the Cavs. It's still like a really valuable asset, and I think it's interesting too, because that's what the Cavs prioritize. Like, we know that Isaiah was sort of like someone that they, if he's healthy, is a good replacement for Kyrie. Crowder is a really good contract, a really good fit with LeBron. They valued that Netflix. Mo, what do you make of them with everything that's going on right now, like prioritizing something like the Nets pick instead of, you know, let's say in a vacuum, like they could get all win now pieces that are maybe a little bit younger, but prioritizing something that literally has no impact on what kind of team they'll be this year in a potential LeBron walk year?
Yeah, I think that's the key to it, is they needed to sort of have some sort of insurance should LeBron walk away, you know, at the end of this year, which is a possibility. Everybody's talking about like a foregone conclusion. I still don't know if it is. I think it's a long way to next July. So
I think anyone says that they know what LeBron's doing, I think they're crazy. Like, I just don't think it's, I think there's like so many things that would like, I think he, like, it's certainly like a possibility. I think like it'd be crazy to not admit that. But I also think like if the Lakers are just absolutely awful this year and like Paul George or someone else doesn't want to go to LA and like all these things don't line up in a certain way, I don't know if like he can look at the Lakers, who it seems like who would be the team he would go to, and he's like, yeah, I can still win there. Because I don't imagine LeBron's just going to go, yeah, I really just want to live in LA and not compete. Like, I just can't imagine that's actually an option for him. It's like the Lakers actually have to show some kind of progress and ability to go get some other star, which easily could happen even if they're bad. But like, there's just like a lot that has to happen in the next year to realistically know what LeBron's going to do.
Yeah, I mean, the idea that he's going to go to the Lakers, we're talking about a guy that wants to go wherever he goes next year. It's because he believes, I'm going to win a championship with this team next year. And I don't, even if he goes to the Lakers, even if Paul George and them, you know, goes with him, and it's Paul George, Braun, Ball, Ingram, you know, and they have to jettison some of those other pieces, but if that's their core, I don't look at that core going like they're going to beat the Warriors. And I don't see that. I don't just see them, the Lakers, just making a gigantic leap that would make them want to, you know, that would make LeBron go like, yeah, I can really play there, especially because he doesn't really enjoy playing with young guys. You have to remember, he got the Cavs to trade the number one pick, you know, Andrew Wiggins, to Minnesota to get Kevin Love because he wanted a veteran. He wants to be around vets and guys that can win. So I'm not sure the Lakers are the piece. And I'm with you, too. Anybody that says they know where he's going to go, you know, it's full of it. It's just because I don't think he knows yet. You know, he may know he wants to leave Cleveland. That might be a sure thing. I don't know. But I'm not convinced that LeBron has that all set up. So going back to that reason why that pick is so important, it just gives them insurance, you know. And now there are rumblings today that, you know, teams are calling them and asking them about that pick. I wouldn't be shocked, Chris, to see the Cavs make a big move, you know, come trade deadline and move that pick and Kevin Love for a huge piece. You know, people are talking to DeMarcus Cousins, and you know, I don't think Cousins would be their target if that was the case. I think if they're going to move that pick, it'd be, you know, for Anthony Davis, and that at that point teams will know like, oh crap, you know, Brooklyn's actually really going to be terrible, you know, and they have a real good shot at that number one pick. Then that value of that pick goes up. So I think, you know, there could be an interesting thing come February where a deal might fall into their laps and they might be able to get a superstar using that pick and, you know, as bait. But right now, I think it's just a smart insurance policy for the Cavs.
Yeah, and I think you would have there. I think too, just like we talk about LeBron leaving, I think you would have to see like him commit to them to see them actually trade that pick in season, unless like an Anthony Davis level player becomes available. And I think there's only like a handful of guys that really fit that criteria. I think it's like almost more likely that they would take keep the pick all year, don't you do anything with it, just let the season run its course, however that ends up, and then you get someone like. You take, let's say you get the second pick, you get Bagley. Let's say Porter goes one, you take Bagley two.
Right.
You could get Wiggins 2.0 situation where it's like instead of, you know, nabbing, you know, to using that guy to be on your team and like have him learn from LeBron, you flip him and maybe that's where the Kevin Love money comes in and whatever, like Shumpert, if he opts in, you could have another $10 million, you could deal her. And then you go get someone with like with that kind of package where like the player's there. And because then by then they would have at least an idea if LeBron was staying, because if he's staying, I think like you'd be more inclined to go all in for pieces. But if not, like I really think Dan Gilbert like is 100% trying to avoid the 2010-2011 Cavs ever again. And I think like that there's potential friction there because like that involves getting a type of player, like you mentioned, that LeBron really historically doesn't always have the most patience for.
Right. And that's the thing. So, you know, it's a tough situation the Cavs are in because LeBron's not going to give them any indication. You know, it's, you know, he likes kind of keeping them, you know, uncomfortable. I feel like something he's talked about and he's, or has been talked about him, you know, something he may have learned from Pat Riley of just kind of keeping everybody around you on your toes. So he's not going to give them any indications. Like he's not walking in there January going like, hey, I'm going to sign here long term, so let's go get these pieces. He might walk in saying like, we should go get these pieces, but he won't commit. And I think, you know, and he shouldn't have to. I think that gives him, you know, a bargaining chip that he wants to keep in play. So it puts the Cavs in a tough situation. And again, I don't see them moving that pick, but I could just see a scenario where teams will slowly kind of start trying to make offers and something will come along their way where it's like, wow, we should actually move this pick because this is a hell of a piece, even if LeBron leaves.
Yeah. Before we continue here, quick reminder to all of our listeners to go check out the entire Locked On Network. You can search on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Locked On NBA or Locked On Network, and you can find all 30 teams in one feed. So you could get Locked On Cavs, Locked On Lakers, Locked On Celtics, whatever pod you want to listen to. It's going to be in one iTunes feed or wherever you get your podcasts. That's how I listen to the whole networks. And when I'm preparing to watch other teams play the Cavs and I'm doing research on other teams, I go to that network and I listen to those podcasts. So go check that out. And while you're there, just go give Locked On Cavs a five.
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway's Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4x gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.
Star rating and review as well. So, Mo, to look more into detail of what the Cavs got in terms of actual players, Isaiah Thomas is, I think, like just because of the unknowns of him, he's in Cleveland now. He's wearing number 3. He's got a locker in Independence. He's working out with the team, and they're trying to establish a timeline on his hip. From everything we know, which is really nothing, it seems like he's going to be out a little bit. He hinted at that in his comments to Woj. We've seen, you know, a large portion of the year is sort of the phrasing. What that means is sort of unclear, but if you were the Cavs, like, how concerning really should that be for a team that hasn't really honestly cared about the regular season at all in the last 2.5 years?
I mean, it's definitely a concern. Like, his role is to play a major piece. You know, if he's out a significant amount of time, then you're moving guys like Derrick Rose or God forbid Jose Calderon into the starting lineup, you know, and these are guys that coming off the bench is pretty solid pieces, but starting, like, I think Rose is just not a good fit in that starting lineup, you know, but without IT, it really kind of puts you in a disadvantage. And then on top of that, you want to get as many minutes as possible between him and LeBron so that they can kind of start gelling and forming some sort of chemistry on the court. You know, it's every player is different. It's not like he's exactly like Kyrie, you know, and they have to figure out how to scheme defensively to make up for his shortcomings defensively. And so the more time he has on the court, the better. So if he's out a long chunk of time, you know, there was talk, I saw stuff of, you know, not till the All-Star break, some stuff till Christmas, you know, like it's such a varying degree. But if he's out really for that long of a stretch, it's going to be tough to develop a kind of cohesive chemistry and kind of keep it going. Listen, the Cavs are still a great team. They still have this guy, LeBron James, at least for another year. You can't count him out, you know, and he's always going to make plays and you're always going to be in games with him. But just a matter of how much energy he also has to exert while IT's out is something that's going to factor into, you know, his play come playoff time, you know. So you don't want to wear him down either.
Yeah, I think that's the reason. And I think, too, it's like worth wondering if the Cavs could have done a better job in finding other point guards. Because I think the summer and early last year, like, they've prioritized getting a playmaker, you know, to help LeBron and just help Kyrie then. But it's an interesting decision to, like, say playmaking is what you want there, because, like, what their style is really, when it comes down to it, has been based on two guys doing all the creating. And then, like, in terms of the point guards they've had around LeBron, and aside from Kyrie, it went from Dele, who, you know, was really kind of a two, but he sort of fit what they needed really well on second units. You go to Deron Williams, who was okay-ish and then was really bad in the finals, who doesn't even have a team yet, as we recorded this, and really had not a great relationship with some of the Cavs. They drafted Kay Felder, who is an undersized, ball-dominant guy who doesn't exactly fit. And then you get Calderon, who was good a couple years ago and is ish, whatever now. And you get Derrick Rose, who can still put up numbers, but you have the knee concerns. And you have the idea that he's not a good shooter. And like, I wondered, like, just thinking about Isaiah, thinking about Kyrie, who had his, you know, own set of injuries, I sort of wonder if the Cavs could have prepared better or, like, targeted different guys that maybe could have protected them, like, whether it's behind Kyrie or behind Isaiah, just so they weren't in a position where Derrick Rose, who's a weird fit with LeBron, and then the other guys on the roster, like, weren't their only options in case Isaiah can't go until the All-Star break.
Well, it was a tough run for them just because they don't have the money to
and trade exceptions only get you something when you have something to sweeten those deals, and like Channing Frye and Amon Shumpert and Richard Jefferson aren't exactly things that get you like starting caliber players. So it's not like an easy situation by any means, but it's almost like I never have understood the Derrick Rose thing, I guess, is sort of my bigger point here. It's like, I don't understand. I don't think it's fit with LeBron is good at all.
I actually thought the way I looked at the Derrick Rose thing, and the way I would want to use him if I was a coach, you know, with the Cavs, is he's the guy in the second unit who, when LeBron goes to the bench, I'm going to give him the ball and let him go, you know. And I think Derrick Rose for 15, 20 minutes is great. And I think he's a good help for the team, scoring spark off the bench. He's going to get to the rim. He's going to draw fouls, which then, you know, when you put LeBron back in, now LeBron's closer to the bonus. So when he attacks, he's going to the line, you know, more frequently. So I think that's kind of how I would play. I don't see a great fit of the two of them playing together, but I kind of look at it as when LeBron goes out, that's Rose's minutes. That's when you got to put Derrick in to let him kind of just go off and attack the rim and be ultra aggressive and just tell him, hey, when you get in there, attack the paint, attack the paint, attack the paint. He's not a playmaking guard. He's not a guy that's going to, you know, run pick and rolls and get everybody involved. As we saw in New York, like, Porzingis would have to be going on a great run for three quarters, you know, and have like 30 going into the fourth and then not touch the ball in the fourth quarter. You know, I think that's just the way Derrick Rose plays, is he just goes, you know. And I think that's the kind of thing, I think you just use him off the bench kind of as a utility scorer, but not somebody I'd really play with LeBron. But again, that's where this IT situation becomes a problem, because now you're going to end up playing him with LeBron. And the way I would kind of look at it then at that point is, you know, he's not the guy I want to run the offense. But, you know, late in clock, you know, when LeBron kicks it out off of a pick and roll, you know, I would want that ball to go to Derrick Rose and have him attack off the off that pass and really kind of attack the shifting defense. And that might make things easier for him. But in the long run, I wouldn't want him my ultimate goal would be to have him kind of come off the bench and to relieve LeBron and bring in some scoring off the bench, because that was a problem for them last year. You know, LeBron would go to the bench and then they would give up leads.
Yeah, no, they were like cratered, and that, which is a problem in itself considering the other pieces. Like Kevin Love, I feel like some of it was mindset. Like everything I've talked to in that organization indicates that it was, they put a lot of emphasis on LeBron in a way that sort of made it deflating when he wasn't on the floor. And like then you saw Ty Lue really not play, you know, Kyrie without LeBron after a certain point to kind of avoid some of the questions around that, which I think are fair questions. But with Isaiah and with like this point guard fit, I think one of the interesting questions I don't know the answer to yet, and we haven't like heard from Lue, we haven't heard from Kobe Altman, we haven't really heard from Isaiah or LeBron really. Could this be a different role for Kevin Love this year? Like, could this be the time that we see Kevin Love actually do what he did in Minnesota to an extent? Like, he's never going to be that guy again, at least in Cleveland. But like, could this be? Is this an opportunity to rejigger things to get Kevin Love just involved more, especially post Kyrie? Or is that something you think the ship might have sailed? And do you think that actually makes sense for them in terms of tactically changing in year four of the second LeBron era?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think you have to use him more. You know, I think he's a guy. Look, Kevin Love in the post can be a playmaker out of the post. You know, I don't understand why they've gone away so much from the post-ups of Kevin Love. I know the value and the analytics and tell you there's not as much value there, but that was a key part of his game, you know, and that was something he was really skilled at. And it may not necessarily been, hey, he's going to score in the post all the time, but he's going to create out of it, which means, you know, he's going to force a double team. He's going to just make things easier. I think you have to rejigger things a little bit, you know, and take advantage of it. Because right now he's their best second option. I mean, who else would you look at on that team and say is a better second option? I don't think Derrick Rose is a good second option for this squad. I think, you know, no, like I said earlier, he's a guy that's got to come off the bench for you and score. But I think Kevin Love's your guy that, you know, you need to kind of give him more touches, give him touches in the post, give him more touches at the elbow, let him kind of create. It's not like he's a bad passer. Like, he can pass, he can play, he can shoot, he can post up, utilize all his skills. You know, I think that's something that would be a very positive thing. Of course, the hard part about when you post Kevin Love up is everything gets clogged up, because if he's in there with Tristan Thompson, then Thompson's clogging the paint as well, and that's where things get difficult. So that might be why they don't post him up as much. But I still think you got to utilize his skills a bit more. And I think the Kyrie trade helps him in the sense that he is going to get a bigger role and more touches. So they got to do it. They got to find ways to get him more involved, because you can't go 82 games regular season and just depend on LeBron every night and then count on him through, you know, four playoff rounds, you know, to do the same thing. You know, it just gets too tough and your body just can't take it.
Yeah, that to me is sort of like a question, because we know the Cavs don't want to wear down LeBron, even if they maybe played him, you know, a few too many minutes per game last year. You have a whole season to think about. And if Isaiah's out, you're presented with, you give Kevin Love more to do, or you're giving Derrick Rose more to do, or like, are you giving J.R. Smith more to do? Like, none of those, like, Kevin Love should be clearly the option to actually take on some of that responsibility. And you're right, like, the concerns about Tristan Thompson and him clogging the lane in this NBA are totally fair. Like, you know, do the Cavs have necessarily like enough shooting? If Love, who's been a floor spacer for them, if he's posting up, if JR is like your best floor spacer, and we've seen teams ignore LeBron in the regular season, they would probably ignore Rose. I mean, I keep thinking of this clip from last year where it was like Drew Holiday ran to the opposite elbow and let Rose shoot a three because he just didn't care. And like, teams are going to do that. And like, that's a problem. And it clogs things up for an offense that has been predictable but very effective. And if it is an interesting question of, does the one way you could diversify it this year create a bunch of secondary problems that you'd have to figure out how to solve? And then you have LeBron, so maybe it's fine, but again, then maybe that still ends up putting pressure on him until Isaiah comes back, if Isaiah comes back at close to what he was last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, if Isaiah comes, then again, it's a different story, right? Then he's really the second option, and you'll have more floor spacing, because it's exactly as you just lined it up. You know, nobody's going to pay attention to Rose, you know, at the three-point line. LeBron's been better at the three-point line, but again, it's not like you'd prefer him shoot those shots versus driving in the paint and just dunking all over you or creating for others. You know, if Kevin Love's not in the post, you have him spacing the floor. You're limited with guys like Tristan Thompson and Rose. Those guys are fit into a ball or a box that's essentially let them shoot those shots. You know, like, that's fine. We want the ball to go there. You know, go help off of those guys. And that's the thing that really just hamstrings that offense.
Yeah, that's gonna be very interesting to see how the Cavs do approach it. And Isaiah's timeline really does impact that, because I would imagine that if they know he's going to be out until February, they'd be more inclined to try Kevin Love and give him more to do than they would if Isaiah was going to be back in November, just because, like, you would have to survive most of the regular season without Isaiah. And I think that the nice thing about Isaiah is, one, he can do a lot of what Kyrie did. And two, he does have some skills, like what he did in Boston, coming off screens, coming off handoffs. He's a decent spot-up shooter. Like, there are things that he should be sort of bendable in a way that if they have to fit him in, like, he's going to want his touches for sure, because that's what we know about Isaiah. He wants his touches, and he needs the ball in his hands really to be effective. But, like, there is a way for him to, I think, kind of get fit in retroactively. The other guy that comes over in this trade is Jay Crowder. I don't know how much this thesis will hold up, but I kind of wonder that he might be more impactful than Thomas, just because I think he's the defensive piece that the Cavs have been missing on this team for 3 weeks. He's not peak Shane Battier, but he fills sort of the same role. One, how do you see him fitting with the Cavs? And how do you think he's best deployed on this team?
Well, I mean, he's exactly what they need in a 3-and-D guy. You know, they're building a team that's supposed to take on the Warriors. You know, last year, you know, they made that move for Kyle Korver, and you can tell that their thought process was, we're going to get as much shooting as we can because that's how we're going to compete with the Warriors. You know, to be honest, and at the time I was on board, you know, after looking at it, hindsight, you know, had 2020 and all that fun stuff, you know, I think about it more and more. I'm like, wow, they really should have tried to trade for like PJ Tucker over Kyle Korver. Because what you need is defense. If you want to beat the Warriors, you know, nobody's going to outshoot the Warriors. Like, let's just be honest. There's not a team out there that can really outshoot those guys. So you need to be able to defend those guys and make it difficult for them and make those shots tough shots. It doesn't mean you're going to beat them, but I think that's your best chance. And adding a guy like Crowder is exactly the kind of guy you want to add onto a team that's going to compete against the Warriors. He's 3-and-D. He's going to fit in. He's, you know, I don't know if he's necessarily going to start, but he's definitely, I think, going to play crunch time minutes for them because of his defense. He has the ability to knock down the three ball. It's not like automatic, but it's still pretty good. I don't have his percentages right in front of me, but he's still pretty solid. So I think he fits in the role of, he's the guy that can come in and play D for you, you know, and he's going to eat some of those Kyle Korver minutes, you know, and he's going to take away time from, you know, Iman Shumpert and J.R. Smith. But that means he makes some of those guys expendable. You know, I don't know if there's a market for Iman Shumpert, but they have an opportunity to explore it now with a guy like Jay Crowder out there. And he can defend, you know, he can guard, you know, anyone 1 through 5. It depends on the point guard, I guess, but let's go 2 through 5. You know, he can guard those guys. He can guard bigs. He can definitely bring some toughness to you. So I think he's a really important piece. And the other thing too, that doesn't, you know, it gets talked about quite a bit, but I just want to mention again, he's on a great contract. I think he's got two or three more years at $7 million a year. Whereas guys who are making, you know, basically double or almost triple that, who aren't as good as him.
Yeah, no, I think that's a huge thing, because if LeBron does leave next summer, that's a contract you can, I think, definitely flip for an asset. His skill set is exactly what you want with an NBA. As a shooter, you know, almost at 40% last year, and a career high 5.5 attempts per game. That's a really good sign. One of the things that I'm kind of curious about what they do with him is, I think there's an argument, like, they've talked, not shockingly, like, one of the reports is that Lou is talking about, you know, playing him and LeBron together, which is, like, the obvious, you know, like, simple thing to do. Like, they absolutely should be doing that, and it'd be, like, a concern if Lou wasn't going to do that. I wonder if you could, if they would consider, based on their center depth and based on how much they probably don't want to play Channing Frye, and depending on how Zizic is really ready to contribute, and maybe Eddie Tavares, although I think he's probably going to end up on a two-way deal if they cut him. Could you go with a starting five of Crowder, LeBron, Love, JR, and then let's say Rose or Isaiah? Like, could Crowder be a better fit in the starting lineup just to kind of maybe create more space for Love to post up? Or is he, like, is he off the bench? Or do you kind of interchange it throughout the year? The Cavs haven't always been the most flexible team, and Lou hasn't been the most adept at necessarily switching things up in the regular season when he doesn't feel like he has to. But I kind of don't know what they're going to do with Crowder in that sense, but I kind of would be almost more intrigued if they decide to start him and bring Tristan off the bench and putting him back in that six-man energy role that he was in a couple years ago.
Yeah, that's a really interesting lineup. You know, you talking about kind of you're playing LeBron at the three, I'm assuming, and Crowder at the four, or the other way around. It kind of just depends on what they want. I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I don't know how they're going to do it. I mean, he can definitely be – he's a starter in the league. Like, Crowder can start in the league, and you're not going to feel like, wow, we have four guys who are starting and one guy who should not be starting. You know, so he definitely adds versatility to the squad. You know, they can go small if they really want to. You know, and they can he really kind of covers a wart that they – I mean, they just really didn't have this last year, right? Like, who was their 3-and-D guy last year? Like, you would look at their roster and go, and like, you don't have that. You don't have a guy who defends, you know? LeBron didn't have a great year defensively. And that's by LeBron standards. He was a good defender. I think, you know, we kind of tend to go, like, we expect LeBron to be almost godlike sometimes. And if he doesn't reach that level, we look at him going like, oh, he had a bad game. No, he had a good game. He had a good LeBron game, is a great game for most people. So, you know, I think there's a level of, you know, I think LeBron's going to have to pick up his defensive intensity a bit, though. I think, but Crowder kind of allows LeBron to rest a bit defensively as well, because he doesn't have to guard the best wing player. So there's a value in starting Crowder. I think you got to look also on the chemistry side of it. What five guys blend well together during training camp? You know, I mean, the thing about Ty Lue, he's going to have to experiment a lot during the year. That's something he's got to get used to. At least, you know, November, December, like, they're going to have to play with lineups to figure out what's the right lineup, you know? Is Zizic at the point where you can go, wow, we can actually start Zizic instead of Thompson, you know, or, you know, and bring Thompson off the bench? I highly doubt that. I still think their starting lineups still going to be Thompson, Love, LeBron, JR, and Rose, but... You know, Crowder can push for minutes and compete with JR, you know, and really make things interesting.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see, too, what they do at the end of their rotation, because, like you mentioned, Crowder makes Shumpert a little less necessary. And I wonder if they experiment with him at point guard like they talked about last year, at least playing him having on the floor just to guard ones and then offsetting, you know, LeBron and two ball handling. I wonder... You know, how many minutes JR loses if Korver plays every night? You know, does this? I one of the losers of this really is Chetty Osman, who's had like a really good Eurobasket, but he's a rookie, and the role that he theoretically could have been thrown into to at least give him some reps, Crowder's going to fill that, and I think like you won't maybe necessarily see as much of him, at least on nights where they're playing, where LeBron's playing. Like, maybe he plays on rest nights and then depends on the D League. The last thing with Crowder, can he actually make the Cavs that much better on defense? Like, can he actually get them to not being terrible? Because, like, some of it was effort, some of it's definitely personnel, but can, like, that one guy who isn't necessarily, like, a elite defender but is very good, especially in a team sense, like, can he actually make you good enough to where it actually matters in some way?
He helps. You know, he can't fix the defense by himself. You know, it's, look, Kevin Love's not a good defender. Channing Frye, when he's in the game, is not a good defender. You know, Rose is not a good defender. IT, whenever he comes into the lineup, is not a good defender. You know, these are guys right off the bat. There's a lot of weak holes, you know, weaknesses there. He can help, but it's not like he's going to we're not going to look at the Cavs going like, damn, they're a hell of a defensive team now. I mean, there might be a marginal improvement, but I'm not expecting like a vast, vast improvement. You know, I'm not expecting to see it where, you know, they're going to go from, I think they were like, what, 22nd in defensive rating this year. I'm kind of just guessing, but they were in the low 20s. You know, I'm not expecting them to be a top 10 defense this year. You know, if they make an improvement, they're going to be like at 17 or 16 at best.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think like what you'll see them, my guess about what they'll try to do schematically, because Lou likes to switch pick and rolls. I don't know how much you can do that with Isaiah just because of Isaiah size, like you're asking him to get bullied. But I think you'll see a lot of LeBron off ball and kind of playing in help defense where he is, I think, most effective at this point. And you're going to have Crowder guarding the Kawhis, the KDs of the world. And we'll see how that goes. I think, you know, it's one thing against a team like it worked against Indiana and then Boston and in the playoffs last year, pre-Golden State. Golden State's a whole other animal because they're freaking the Warriors and they just have shooting and playmaking everywhere. Are the Cavs actually better now in a tangible way? And are they any worse off in specific areas in your mind after this trade? I think, like, defensively, like we've talked about, they could be better, but I just don't know exactly how much better they are. And some of that has to be, we have to see them play. But I think on paper, it's an interesting question to kind of say, are they actually a lot better now or better in any tangible way?
No, I think they're a better team than they were last year. Let's assume Isaiah comes back healthy in that regard. You know, I think that adding another wing in Crowder is really helpful. You have assets in, you know, Zizic is going to have, you know, appeal. Seti Osman, who I didn't know much about until I started watching Eurobasket this past few weeks, who's been pretty impressive in my regards. Like, these are assets at the very least. Like, you're right, they may not play him much, but there might be a market for him, you know, and you might be able to get an asset out of it. Whereas last year, they didn't really have much in terms of assets or in any sort of pieces. Like, trade deadline didn't matter to them. They had to wait to see who got bought out, and that's how they got guys like Deron Williams and pieces like that. So, you know, this year they have a few more assets, so their cupboard is better. So they got better there. They added a defensive wing, like we've talked about. You know, so they've gotten better there. They're a little trouble now with trying to figure out what's going to go on with IT's injury, but overall, I don't think they're worse than they were last year. I think they're as good or maybe a little bit better than last year's team.
Yeah, well, I think the Chetty thing is, like, just interesting because I kind of was thinking he could have, like, a Patrick McCaw, like, esque role where he's, like, not, like, important to the team's success, but you just, like, give him some minutes just to see how he does. And, like, I think on a team like the Cavs, who I think, like, probably are still the favorites in the East, like, even if they're not the one or the two seed, like, they still should be. They have LeBron, and he's still, like, very, very good at basketball. Like, they still should be a favorite to get to the finals at the very least. Is there, like, in your mind, like, any benefit to just giving someone like Chetty, like, even if it's just 15 minutes a game, 12 minutes a game, just something? Is there, like, do you think there's, like, just a tangible benefit in the context of figuring all of this out and doing the experimenting that Lou's going to have to do? Is there some benefit of just giving Chetty minutes that maybe otherwise would go to Korver, go to Shumpert, go to J.R. Smith, go to Jay Crowder? Like, are there benefits? Richard Jefferson? Is there Jeff Green, even? Because they have all these sort of 3-4-y guys that are sort of okay. Is there benefit to just giving someone like Chetty actual minutes just to see what happens and see how he adjusts to the NBA?
Yeah, before I answer that question, I forgot all about them having Jeff Green. And that says a lot about how far he's fallen. I forgot all about them having Jeff Green. But that's another piece that's interesting that I don't think will help them too much. But to answer your question, absolutely. I think there's always value in playing your young guys, especially early on in the season, to get an understanding of what you have in those guys. You know, the one thing about the Spurs that nobody really replicates, which I kind of find funny, everybody replicates the rest, but nobody really understands that, like, Pop uses that time to evaluate these young guys. This is how we found out guys like Jonathan Simmons can play, you know, and may have to play in the playoffs. I mean, guys like Boban all of a sudden were getting minutes, and now he has a huge contract in Detroit. Davis Bertans in, you know, he got minutes. You know, there's a value in playing these young guys to get an understanding of what they can contribute. Because here's the thing. You can't just throw a young kid in May going like, hey, you haven't played all year. Go produce. You know, these guys need to get reps. They need to get practice. And there's nothing better than in-game reps. You can't replicate that in practice no matter how much you scrimmage. It's extremely important for a young player's development to kind of get those minutes. And on top of that, it's important for the coaches to understand what they can expect from these guys, because you don't know when an injury is going to go down. Who knows what happens, you know, first playoff game and Crowder goes down with an ankle injury. Then 5 minutes later, J.R. Smith goes down. You know, you then you got to look, and next thing you know, like, the only guy you really have is Osman, but you don't know what he can do. And just as terrified as you are putting him in, he's probably terrified that he's about to go in this game having not played all year. Like, there's a whole thing that goes to it. I think there's a ton of value in playing him, you know, and giving him minutes. You know what you have in Korver. You know what you get from JR, from Shrumpert. These guys, these young guys, they can come in and they're too – sometimes they're just dumb enough to not know how big of a moment it is that they're going in and can make a play and really help your team out. So I think it's really crucial that they give – they got to give him minutes to just get an understanding of what he can do. And it's not – you know, there are guys that just aren't good practice guys but are great in-game players. And so you can't just say from practice that this guy can't play. You don't know what he can do until you put him on the court.
Yeah, I think that's, 100% that on the last question here, Mo. Does what the Cavs did this offseason, the changes they made, adding everything from Isaiah and Jay Crowder to Jeff Green and Jose Calderon and Chetty and all these different pieces, they've had like an interesting amount of roster turnover, even if some of it isn't the most substantial stuff like Boston's done, but there's been change. Does this season, just in a broad macro sense, actually go any different for the Cavs? Does this actually change what their outcome could be in a way that's either better or worse than what they were last year?
I mean, I think it all comes down to I know it's like a broken record, but the IT injury and how long he's out. You know, if he comes back, you know, around Christmas and they're able to get going, I don't think anything's different. And I think also a product too of being in the Eastern Conference really helps. I think with the Eastern Conference just being relatively weak, I don't really see any challengers besides Boston that can really take on the Cavs and give them a good scare. You know, the Bucks are probably a year or two away. The Sixers aren't healthy. Toronto, I feel like, is just the Clippers of the Eastern Conference. Like, their time's kind of passed. Washington hasn't really improved much this year. Like, I don't see a team that's like, this team's going to beat the Cavs. You know, their biggest threat is Boston. I also think when they play Boston, you're going to get a much more highly motivated LeBron than normal. So I don't know what that means, because you're also going to get a very motivated Kyrie coming at you. So I don't know what that looks like on the court, but I don't think it ends that much differently. I still think at the very least of the Eastern Conference, you know, they're going to the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, probably the finals. But again, you just don't know how everything plays out. But at the minimum, to me, I'd be shocked if they weren't in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I still think they should be the favorites to get to the finals coming out of these. I think, like, Boston's could be a little bit better. Kyrie, I think, gives them something interesting. They're going to have some defensive things to kind of figure out there. But I'm very curious to see, like, how this team ends up going. They have LeBron James, and even if it's his potential last year in Cleveland and all these different things, like, they still have LeBron James to lean on. Mo, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. And just real quick, give everyone a reminder out there where they can find your podcast and where they can find you on Twitter.
Yeah, so on Twitter, you can find me at mo.dakhil_NBA. That's MODAKHIL_NBA. I run the jumpball.net website. You can find everything there, from the Jump Ball University to the podcast, which is also on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And, you know, if anywhere else, just follow me on Twitter. I always tweet out the stuff I'm working on, so you can find the links there.
Yeah, so go give Mo a follow. Go listen to his podcast. There's a lot of great episodes. They did one with Sam Vecini, a former Fear the Sword writer on the Cavs trade that you can go get to, and there's a good one with Mike Prada there as well. So go check those out. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of Locked On Cavs. But for myself and Mo, this has been Locked On Cavs, and thanks again for listening.